Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you with the Positive Mind, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays, here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you things to think about. I got so carried away with yesterday with my 5-HTTT alleles and how they affect whether or not you're going to be depressed or you're going to be able to recover from a tragedy. I mean, just science is moving a mile a minute. We are learning so much about understanding things about ourselves that we used to take for granted. Now comes a new one for me. A lot of implications. Endocannabinoids. Yes, endocannabinoids.
Endocannabinoids.
You just got to be able to roll that off your tongue. The endocannabinoid system.
Oh, you said it really well.
What does the endocannabinoid system have to do with you here on this sunny day in WBAI 99.5 FM in New York? Early spring, endocannabinoid. Mm. Sounds like they go together, early spring.
Mm-hmm.
Cannabinoid, that's a familiar word, Roberta.
Well, from cannabis, sativa, which is marijuana, and cannabinoid means of that family that marijuana belongs to. And it turns out an endocannabinoid, it's like an endorphin. It's a substance, it's a chemical produced by the nervous system that resembles a cannabinoid, a phytochemical produced by the marijuana plant. So
I'm growing marijuana inside me, is what you're saying.
Basically, you are producing the same substance that the plant, in the plant, it would be called a phytochemical. When you produce it, it's called a neurotransmitter. Or you could call it a peptide.
One thing we know. We used to think, we didn't know anything about cannabinoids until recently, and here's what cannabinoids tell us. Cannabinoids once again suggest that there are things inside us that do things to us. Mainly they make us high. They make us feel good. And there are things inside us that we are born with that are meant to make us feel good. And what happens is something outside of us mimics that thing inside us. And it says, look at me, look at me. I'll do that same thing for you 10 times over. So there we are with inner cannabinoids. And somewhere growing on the side of the road comes this little 5-leaf plant that says, hey, kitty. Try me. You know, you're going to like me. And for some reason or other, cannabis becomes attractive. Animals eat it. I know they do. I know it's been called wacky weed, you know, before it was discovered to be marijuana. And it becomes a kind of a substance that people use a lot, smoking marijuana.
There are a lot of substances like that produced by the vegetable kingdom in one form or another, whether it comes from a leaf or from pollen or from flowers. But the bottom line is that it seems that the nervous system of animals has cellular structures that are sensitive to chemicals produced by plants. Well, it's interesting because...
Give us an example of some of the other ones.
Oh, well, the best known one would be the opiates, meaning that opium, of course, is a poppy, is a plant, it's a flower, and it produces a substance. It produces alkaloids that are practically identical to endorphins, and endorphins and enkephalins, and these are substances produced by the nervous system of human beings and animals as well, and they have the same effect and they do the same thing, but one is produced by the animal and one is produced by the plant. Now the interesting thing is I don't believe the plant uses it itself in the way that the animal does.
Oh, you mean you don't think marijuana gets high?
Right.
Right. I understand.
I dare to speculate that it's not in the interest of its own mental or emotional well-being that it produces this cannabinoid. However, we do. We produce cannabinoids inside our nervous system, and they actually have a lot to do with appetite and eating and satiety. Is that how you say it? Satiety? Satiety? The sense of fullness. Meaning that, for instance, people who have been found to have a cannabinoid system that's imbalanced have difficulties monitoring their sense of satiety. They can't tell when they're full. So they keep eating because they can never feel fullness. And that has to do with the endocannabinoid system, meaning the production of and the usage of and the reuptake of and all of the processes involved with neurotransmitters.
Just like, as you may have heard of with many people who do use cannabis, they get the munchies.
Exactly.
And the munchies is, I can't stop eating.
Right.
And it keeps coming because there's no sate point. It shuts off the sate point.
And it has nothing to do with willpower. This is not something that the body that can be controlled through, you know, saying no. You just can't say no to an overactive endocannabinoid production.
So if you eat too much, you blame your inner cannabinoids.
And it's not just the endocannabinoids. There's a whole host of neurotransmitters and hormones and peptides that resemble phytochemicals. And so we're discovering that plants have figured out a way to interact with people. You know, that could be interesting to explore.
Well, plants have figured out how to keep us growing them.
For one thing.
I mean, poppies have no use in the world. There is no reason why we have poppy flowers. We don't need to have colored flowers in the world. We don't need it. The bees would come anyway. But what poppies learned was that humans need poppies for the heroin.
Well, yes, I mean, it's...
And the opium.
Right, they figured out, I mean, I'm not sure, I can't really...
you don't think there was a Papa Poppy who said, you know...
I don't know, but what I
think, because in Afghanistan...
But what I do know is that the nervous system of a human being, if you look at the neurons, at the nervous cells, they have receptors like all cells, and not just the nervous system, but the immune system cells, the cells in the digestive system. I mean, it's not just the nervous system. All over the body, cells have receptors for endorphins, let's say, and cannabinoids, and these are... Receptors are like a system of lock and key, meaning that in order to activate that particular cellular activity, you need to have the right key. You need to have the right neurotransmitter or phytochemical. And once the cell receives, has access to this substance, a certain cellular activity is activated, and in this case, for instance, in the case of endorphins, it's a painkiller. So when we activate endorphins, we numb the pain. So this is how receptors and neurotransmitters work.
And this is going to lead us to an understanding of why we pick miserable lovers and why we have dysfunctional relationships, I tell you. It's kind of an interesting stretch. Hey, let's go back to the beginning here. If there are alcohol, if there is a cannabinoid, is there an alcohol receptor?
Well,
we do produce alcohol.
We produce alcohol, and is there an alcohol receptor? The brain and nervous system of human beings is sensitive to alcohol. I'm not sure that there's an alcohol receptor, meaning an ethanol receptor, but I do know that we produce it in our intestines through the process of fermentation. And when it goes overboard, in fact, you know, Armand, there are some people who, when they overeat a certain kind of food, they actually end up with a hangover. They feel like I have a hangover. And that's because that triggers an overproduction of alcohol in their intestines, and the alcohol, of course, reaches the brain, and so there's really a feeling of drunkenness as well as a hangover just from food, not from drinking alcohol. So, yes, we do produce alcohol in our system, and we have receptors that are sensitive to this substance. So then we also produce alcohol from wine and from whatever else. So it's interesting to see that the body of human beings is sensitive to substances that are produced by plants, and that it seems like the plant really has no other reason to produce that substance other than to make that substance available to humans and maybe other animals.
So that the humans will value it and tend it.
Well, I mean, that's a speculation, but I mean, I can't imagine another reason.
You know, another speculation people are very attracted to, sometimes people can't stay away from carbohydrates. And I'm looking at all the addictions. I'm looking at alcohol. I'm looking at marijuana. Nicotine we'll get to, but how about this, Roberta? If we have an alcohol potential addiction based on our own production of alcohol inside our bodies, wouldn't it make sense that we have a yeast addiction?
Well, sure. What do you mean a yeast addiction?
A yeast addiction because we produce yeast, and yeast is a very big part of ourselves, our bodies.
Well, I think that, yes, I think what I hear you say, Armand, is that anything can become addictive, given that it interferes with the nervous system's activity in such a way that it produces a reward. So, yes, I think that even yeast, in a certain way, can create a sense of reward. And so it can become an addictive organism, meaning that we become addicted to what we feel when there is an overproduction of yeast. Sure, it's possible.
So it may be that people who overproduce yeast may feel themselves very attracted to pasta and bread.
Well, that's been said by many researchers.
Oh, I thought I invented that theory. and alcohol, we could say, well, maybe you're somebody who does ferment inside your body when you eat.
Well, we all ferment. And there are some people who ferment a lot more than other people. And those are the people who are more vulnerable to alcohol, actually, than other people.
And I guess there would be other things. Now, if you think about, we go along the yeast way for a moment. How about fungus? One of the things we're most attracted to in drugs are fungi.
Sure, fungi is an interesting family because the botanists fight over with the biologists to establish whether this is an animal or a plant. No, they can't decide. But a fungi is similar to yeast. It's in the family of mushrooms. And we all know that there are a lot of mushrooms that cause hallucinations. And some mushrooms can kill you because they're toxic. But yes, it's the same concept, that there are some substances in plants and in organisms that trigger reactions in the human nervous system. But the reason why they do that is because the human nervous system already produces the same substance itself, and therefore it is sensitive to it.
We are going to show that if you're addicted to love, if you're addicted to sex, it all comes from the same kind of source. Addicted to mushrooms, you know, sometimes I think about, Roberta, the Native American people who are doing religious rituals with both fungi and with tobacco.
But you see, my belief is that they don't get addicted to these substances because there is no record of addiction when tobacco and peyote were used in that way. There's no record of addiction in the way that we know it, in the way that we consider it addiction, because the people who were using these substances were not using them as recreational substances, but more to alter their state of mind so that they could enter in a different dimension where certain psychic experiences would be accessible that one could call religious, one could call mystic, one could call intuitive, whatever you call them. So there was a different intention and there was a different relationship with the plant. Now, when us, let's say, Europeans came over and we treated tobacco like a commodity and we only looked at the profits that could be made from it, I think what happened is it backfired, for instance, and that's just one example, the same thing with alcohol, the same thing with coffee, the same thing with a lot of them. It backfired into an addiction, but I think it's because we have established a relationship with the plant that, you know, may be leading us into that direction as opposed to experiencing the plant as an enhancement of life. It becomes a problem. I mean, I don't know, Armand, what do you think about that? About the whole idea that tobacco, in fact, when it's used a certain way, It seems to, and in fact there's a book I'm thinking about how certain, some people in Central and South America use tobacco to look at cellular structure. It seems to give a kind of vision that it's almost like a microscopic vision, and these shamans were able to describe cellular structure that was so accurate that it sounded like they had looked at DNA under a microscope and seen the actual picture of it, but they never had. And they achieved that vision through the intake of tobacco in a certain way.
I once smoked tobacco on a reservation, and the tobacco they gave me were the tops of the plant, mm-hmm. which is very different than tobacco leaf. The tops were... It was just a whole different substance, and that was what was in the supposed peace pipe. And it was a whole different substance, but my belief is, Roberta, since tobacco seems to be one of those drugs, like caffeine, that seems to be one that humans have taken to so strongly that when we get down the road, after tobacco is illegal, after we no longer smoke it, after we've no longer been produced and put on paper and poisoned and shot full of things that make people get addicted to it, I am sure we're going to discover magic in tobacco. Oh. I'm sure magical healing, you know, we never think of somebody saying, get a pack of tobacco and put it on a burn because it'll heal the burn.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard of that as one of the healing.
Oh, but I think all these substances that plants produce are medicinal if used in a certain way, but a medicine can always be a poison as well if used in a different way, because we're talking about a potent substance. I mean, when you talk about, let's say something like from the coca leaf, the cocaine, the alkaloid.
I was just thinking about coca leaves.
Coca, not cocoa, not the chocolate,
no.
But the coca, right. So coca leaves from which we extract cocaine, in cocaine we intensify the activity of the nervous system, let's say 100 times, so that the same experience is not really any different from the natural workings of the nervous system, but it's intensified to the point where it becomes a high. And that's the activity of dopamine, because what cocaine, the way it affects the brain is by blocking the reuptake of dopamine. That means in simple English that dopamine stays in the nervous system, is not destroyed by the enzymes that would normally destroy it. So it continues to stimulate the nervous system over and over and over. So the nervous system is overstimulated. Well, that happens, dopamine happens anyway. But with cocaine, it happens 100 times, 1,000 times more so. So we experience that as a high.
That's in the refined cocaine.
Yes.
Meanwhile, coca leaves are eaten all over the world. In the fields, somebody will be chewing on a couple of coca leaves, and that'll keep them going. That keeps them stimulated. It's part of their lives.
Not only that, but they couldn't live at that altitude without it, because the heart would pop. It's too difficult to live in the Andes at that altitude without the coca leaf. So the coca leaf actually is an adaptation that allowed these people to survive in an environment that would have been otherwise unlivable.
Amazing. This is parts of Mexico where people chew poblano peppers, mm-hmm. the very, very, very hot peppers, mm-hmm. the red peppers, and they chew them all day long. And you know you're burning all over the place inside, and you know they know exactly what to avoid and exactly where to go, and they have this controlled burn which results in a kind of a high.
I'm sure.
You know, and just as you're burning all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, one of the things that we've learned to do to get ourselves by. Now, is that addiction? Is that not addiction?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because I think addiction, one can get addicted to one's own behavior. There's no need to introduce a substance from the outside. So addiction is not defined by the substance. It's defined by the behavior of the person who we're observing. So is it addiction? I can't answer the question because it's not based on the substance, as I just said.
Our the basis of our inquiry here is that if there is anything that we are addicted to, psychological addiction, physiological addiction, we are claiming that there's a basis for it in your organic structure.
There is a basis because the body is already producing the very same substances that we introduce from the outside and become addicted to. We're already producing them on the inside, so we have a sensitivity to them. So when we introduce them from the outside, the body already knows what these things are because it makes them itself. But when we introduce them from the outside, we interfere with that balance often, and that's why it can lead to problems down the road.
So you have to keep in mind, somebody comes along and takes a look at people and says, you know, they need something to keep them going. Look at that. They're chewing on those leaves. What if I take those leaves and refine them and I make those leaves a little stronger and give them to them in a powder they could put in their nose? Will they buy it? Well, once you buy it, of course, the coca leaves don't mean anything to you anymore.
Right.
Once you have the cocaine, the coca leaves don't mean anything to you anymore.
Right. Right.
So it's the idea is that people have learned to exploit the naturally addictive process.
Mm-hmm.
That people have, the addictive potential.
Potential, right.
That people have. And this closely relates to our love relationships, which we're going to get to when we get back from our break. But before we do, I want to make sure that I do this before 1:30, Roberta, if it's okay with you.
Yes, it's fine. In fact, I would love to. Because we're talking about relationships with a plant, how about our relationship with animals?
Well, that's an interesting thing, our relationship with animals. It's fascinating the way we relate to animals. It's fascinating. During Katrina, thousands of pets had to be abandoned. Trucks came by and people went to get picked up, and many people had to leave their dogs and cats behind because there was no room for them. What the people did not expect is that there would be a backlash of depression directly attributable to the loss of pets, which is yet to be uncovered, and we're going to be reading about that soon. Some of the stories were really brutal about people having to leave their pets behind and being forced to. They weren't allowed. You just can't take it with you, and we understand, you know. I mean, if you love your cow and we got room for two people in the car, we're going to say, leave your cow. Well, our relationship to pets and animals seems to have changed and developed over time. Next Wednesday, May 10th, from noon to 3 p.m., we have been invited to do a three-hour special on human relationship to animals and pets.
And this should be really fascinating because there's more and more research on how interaction between species affects species, and especially in interaction between animals and humans, of course, is going to be the focus of the program. There are so many things to learn about animals and how they affect us and what it does to us, how we evolve side by side, and how it affects our nervous system, our psychology. It's fascinating. It's exciting. I can't wait to do the research.
How many pets did you have at one time, Roberta?
Because
when I first met you, you had eight pets. What were they?
Okay, well, I had Sydney, my big Sydney, which is a great Pyrenee, a dog. Then I had a cat, Hugo. Then I had Rexy, the iguana. Then I had Elliot, the ferret. Then I had two hermit crabs. And then I had a parrot, Rags.
Your parrot, Rags, and two hermit crabs. And you had two kids who love these and grew up with these animals.
Yes.
And it all became one family.
It did. In fact, that was my idea, that because I'm an immigrant and I don't have a family here in the U.S., I thought I would make a family with pets, and it worked. It worked really well. We were like a big family.
Well, you know, I think it's more the pets make a family with us. The pets go around and they pick we humans, and some of the pets, you know, they like Yo-Yo and Paris, they're just determined to be cute. And if they're cute, you're going to want to be around them.
Yes.
So cuteness is important. Pleasing is important. You don't want to be too mean as a pet. But our relationship with pets is magical. We have found healing properties of people who have pets.
Oh, amazing healing properties.
Amazing. Amazing. I mean, things you can't imagine.
What about those llamas that go into nursing homes and people that are depressed and are not even speaking anymore? All of a sudden they become, you know, they look forward to the day when the llama is going to come so they can pet the llama. And what about the...
Llamas?
Llama.
You mean a llama knocks at a door?
The
Who's at the door? It's the llama. I'm a llama is his name.
The big llama.
You mean somebody brings llamas to
him? Yes, there are llamas turned out to be very sociable and very therapeutic. They have an instinct.
Very pretty.
And pretty. And so I saw pictures of llamas going into a nursing home, and the people at the facility were, you should have seen them, Armand. They looked so happy, like children, all surrounding this llama. And this llama was so majestic, standing there and looking at them and allowing them to touch him and pet him. And there was such an exchange of love between the llama and the people. It's incredible, let alone the birds. Do you know that birds, parrots, are actually capable of learning to speak, but not just the words, the meaning? This is what has been found, that a parrot can learn to speak like a human being can. You tell me, Armand.
Hey, listen, we've got to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to you. But if you've got to leave us, make a note. Wednesday, May 10th, not at our normal time, which is 1 o'clock, at 12 o'clock noon. And this is the way it's going to be during the marathon. I will be with you at noon, no longer 1 o'clock. Abandon that just for the marathon. From noon to 3 and noon to 2, bring you different things which we'll tell you about. But make a note, May 10th. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener supported and non-commercial.
Don't go, Talkback is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's Talkback right here on WBAI New York.
Chido Lopez, and this is called Tumbao Number 5, dedicated to Charlie Mingus, of all people. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with Roberta Maria Atti and The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you just tuned in, you've heard some broken up music mixed with a radio test.
Emergency system.
Do you know the emergency radio system totally failed during 9/11? There wasn't one broadcast.
I know. There was nothing. I know. It was,
it's just
well,
for,
I mean, a lot of things went wrong. You know what I mean, Armand.
We I could get you started.
Right.
We were talking about addictions, and we're talking about different addictions, but we're also talking about dogs and cats and animals. And you should know, on May 10th, we are doing a three-hour special on pets and animals and you and your kitten and your doggy and all the other things.
And it turns out that when we tune into our animal companions, we explore a whole different psychology, and yet it's very... It shows that the research shows that it benefits both the animal and the human in ways that were not even imagined. let alone known. And so that's what we're going to talk about. And that even means if you don't have a pet, that doesn't really matter in terms of the validity of the program, because I think that just understanding the relationship between humans and animals in general can be a great learning experience.
Well, you said something very important. You said you're from New Jersey, I think you said. And you don't have a family.
I am not from New Jersey. I am from Bologna. Let me remind you.
You're from Bologna, Italy.
And so, yes, I am by myself here, and I had my two kids. And, you know, I figured, well, they don't have a grandpa, they don't have a grandma, they don't have aunts and uncles. What can I do? So I filled the house with pets. And they all got along, Armand, the ferret, the iguana. They all would just play together.
And Sydney.
And Sydney was watching over all of us. He was our protector.
And, well, you see, this very thing we're talking about is what we're also talking about. We're talking about reaching out for family. Well, let me not just lose track. It's the 10th is going to be the day of the show. Make a note of that. Then we're going to also be with you on the 24th, which is 2 weeks after that, for another three-hour special about how humans shoot themselves in the foot. That's not the exact title. It's a TBA, but...
And it's from noon to 3 again.
Again. And then I'll also be with you in between on a Thursday, not a Wednesday. I'll be with Kent Robert Shaw, and we're going to be talking about depression. So, you know, go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and you should be able to see the entire schedule there. Are you going to post a schedule on your website?
Sure, and I was also thinking that if anybody would like to see your newsletter, they could send you an email and ask for it if they didn't receive it, because you just sent out a newsletter.
Yeah, we sent it out, and, you know, it got spammed by so many people.
Yeah.
It got spammed. We have a mailing list of, like, 3,500 people.
Make sure you put the Positive Mind .com in the non-spam folder. That way you can get the newsletter.
They can make it easier, actually. They could go to the website, and we have the newsletter on the website.
Okay.
Look how easy that is, and you can't spam it that way.
Right.
Armando Miller, Roberta Maria Atis. Yes, you could look at the. You could go to the newsletter, and you'll see the...
announcements.
The announcements of what's taking place.
So that's... Let's say that again. The 10th of May... Then May 24th with me, 3 hours, noon to 3. Thursday the
17th
with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw.
Yeah. Hey, so...
Is that 1 to 3?
No, that's 12 to 2.
12 to 2.
Probably they're going to make it 12 to 3.
Okay.
But tune in at 12. I am your noonday demon. That's the name of the subject.
I know.
So now this thing with pets, though, is very important because it relates to what we're talking about.
It does.
Because if you think about it, many of the things we have inside ourselves soothe ourselves. Think about it. If you have an inner endocannabinoid,
cannabinoid.
I know I'm not a cannabinoid in my head. It's going to be tough. Cannabinoid. If you have an inner cannabinoid, then you have a lock and key inside your system. One that opens up and says, hey, you got any for me? I'll take it, and it makes me feel good. Just like we have with endorphins. You can produce endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
You feel stress. You have a little lock that opens up, and it says, hey, you got any dope for me? And you say, yeah, here's a little... endorphins, and you feel good.
Well, what the body has learned to do through the centuries, through the millennia, is that whenever there's a situation that is that requires a shift in gears, and it requires a change of mood, and it requires a different perceptual perspective, and it requires an adaptation, the body will go on to produce the chemicals that will facilitate interaction with that specific environmental, let's say, flavor. Now, what's interesting, though, is that let's say that we grow up used to a household where there's a lot of sadness. Because love is inevitable, and that, it's just, I'm saying from a biological perspective, love is an inevitable biological reality. in terms of your neurotransmitters, in terms of the way your nervous system is structured, well, then we learn to associate love and sadness. And so then it almost becomes like an addiction to sadness, because in order to feel love, we have to have sadness. Or else it doesn't feel like love, because that's what we learned. We learned to associate love with whatever was the most, prevalent, predominant feeling or emotional state or mood in the household we were raised, or in the environment we were raised in. So that's something important, I think, Armand, to say, that then we might seek the drugs or the substances or the very things that repeat, you know, that bring us back to that feeling, not so much even because we enjoy it that much, but because it's familiar. The nervous system tends to look for what's familiar.
Well, let's start off with a basic. Do you think that there's a sense of inner peace that is so magnificent that feels like total love? Do you think the godlike feeling is available inside every human at some time or other in their lives? Do you think that feeling, do you ever see anybody when they're sleeping and they're smiling?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this beautiful smile on somebody's face? Or a child who's perfectly asleep with a smile, dreaming or no dreaming?
I think everyone has had that experience at least once, Armand. I think. Do you think?
I think it's a baseline. I think infants have it when they're born. I think there may be a lot of stuff getting used to what's happening in the world, but I think you have it in the womb. I think you have it in the womb when you're first inside this kind of internal space. What do you got to do all day? You meditate your navel. I mean, you're laying around inside a body. And then you have this going on, and I think infants have this way of carrying it, and then they get outside, and then there's still this connection with love. And there are certain children you could see that embody this love feeling. They're not just pleasers. These are kids who are love itself. Haven't you seen that?
Yes, I have experienced people and children like that, yes. I have.
Now, when you see that, what happens next is the child gets a trade-off. The child has tasks to do, and somebody comes along and says to the kid, okay, step out of that love space. Step out of that just feeling good for a moment. You got to do some homework. And the kid says, I want to lay here and listen to some music. No, come on, you got to do homework. If you don't do homework, I will not love you. If you do homework, I will make you crispy palace prawns. I will make you rice pudding. I will make you good stuff. I'll make you good food. I will love you. I'll make you pasta bolognese.
Mm.
Is pasta bolognese really from Bologna?
No.
I didn't think so. So what happens, the child is forced out of their world of self-love, and I don't mean self-love like, you know, narcissistic world, but I think everybody's capable of loving themselves, except that you're forced out of it. And now the external reward, just like the cannabis, just like the alcohol, just like all the other drugs, the outside reward becomes the dominant force. Now, instead of loving yourself, you say, oh, if only I could get loved by her or him, meaning mommy or daddy. That's what I need. They forget about the inner love. Some people are lucky enough to stay close to religion, because religion offers you a bit of a promise of staying connected. It says pray, meditate. But then we get a rule. But, you know, you gotta make a donation to the church, because if you don't make a donation to the church, you're not gonna have access to this love. So even the God love becomes conditional. Now you have to do the commandments and you gotta obey all the rules. So they become the granters, the dope dealers, the love sellers, your parents, your religion, your educators, the teachers. They are your dealers, and they're selling you love.
Mm-hmm.
You want some approval? How about this? Do you remember gold stars? There was a gold star that we used to get. There was a gold star, a silver star, and a red star. And it's a little gold star. If you got that gold star on your page, it meant you are loved.
Mm.
Huh. And if you really loved your kid, buy him a box of gold stars.
Mm.
They were like 10 cents. But, you know, okay, so here's the idea now. The idea is that love and romance goes from an internal felt sense of satisfaction to an externally dependent, looking for, finding it on the outside, just as we look for it in food, in sex, in love, in chemicals, in everything else we do. It's the tobacco, it's the caffeine, it's all the other things we search for, because it's put on the outside. So now there comes this cute phrase, which is, you can't love anyone until you love yourself. Well, I'm not sure that's true, because I know people who can love someone else, but they can't love themselves.
In fact, I find that to be more often the case than not. For most people, it seems to be.
They just don't know how to love themselves anymore.
Right. They forgot.
They forgot.
Yeah.
Because they got caught up in the dope deal.
Yeah.
See, here comes the peddler. Here comes the person. Here comes your husband, your wife, who's going to reward you and marry you and buy you a house and get you a car and do all these good things and get you some jewelry, and they'll be faithful and they'll do all these nice things.
And the problem with that also, Armand, is that it's never enough, because really no one can supply as much as a human being needs. The supply, really, that much love can only come from an inner supply, what I'm hearing you say, that if we become dependent on the outside, then the moment it ceases to give us what we expect, we feel betrayed and abandoned and neglected. But really, the first betrayal and abandonment and neglect has been our own inner abandonment of ourselves and our own loving self, which is always there. This is the other thing I'm hearing you say, and I am in complete agreement with you, that there's a loving self standby right there, and that loving self is waiting to be activated at any moment we choose to activate it, and it has unconditional love waiting for us to access when we need it. And we don't have to be perfect. This is the idea. I was listening to that wonderful doctor in the Dr. Kokai's show just a half hour ago, who was saying, you know, unless you detoxify yourself, you're not going to feel good. Well, she's got a good point there, and I can see where she's coming from, but I beg to disagree, in the sense that unless you love yourself before you get to be perfect, how are you ever going to get there? How are you ever going to feel really good about yourself unless you can start exactly where you are, as you are, with all of your imperfections and with all of your toxicity and with all of your do's and don'ts and conditions and addictions and faults and flaws? How do you access the love? If I have to be that good before I can earn that love, forget it, Armand. I'm never going to get there.
But you see, just as you're saying, Roberta, there are no conditions of it. You don't have to love yourself. You just have to let yourself love.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
You go running down by the beach. We've got summer coming up. We live out near the water. You know what I mean? Any one of us can get to the water. Go running down by the beach. Get there 7 o'clock in the morning. Get out to Long Island, get out to any of the nearby beaches, get out to Brooklyn, you get to a beach, suddenly 7 o'clock in the morning, the sun is coming up, and you're in your sweats, and you suddenly breathe the air, and you hear the ocean, and you stop. And you go, that's it. That's all you need. Just don't take that and give it away to anybody. Don't say, I gotta run home and get Isaac, and bring Isaac over here to breathe this air. Take in the moments. Take in the moments of perfection. Just take them in. Record them. Put an implant in your brain. You and make a set in your own mind that you will experience this thing which we'll call love, or we'll call perfection, whatever it is, and slowly but surely you cut down on your dependency on getting it from the outside.
Right. And I even would take that one step further, which is, if you can't make it to the beach because you're homebound and you can't walk and you're alone and no one can take you there, let's say you're in your home and you're by yourself and you know, and it's hard and it's difficult and you may be depressed, whatever. But if you just stop, like Armand says, just stop looking for it. That's the first thing. Stop looking for it. Just stop. And just be with yourself. I am sure there is one spot somewhere that you may have forgotten, but you have been there once, at least once in your life. There's one place where you can find it. And it can be, you know, in the morning before you get up for coffee, before you've had any fixes, before you do anything else, just be with yourself.
You know, maybe the time is right this minute. Maybe it's just right now. Maybe with all of our active talking, you could just let yourself take a moment, right now, on an exhale. Feel that thing we're talking about. When one breath is over, let another begin. Suddenly, there it is, you know. There's that feeling. Precious. As I was talking about it, I began missing it. So I wanted to get that for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I will be back with you tomorrow, right here on WBAI, at 1 p.m. with one more program. And then keep in mind the following week with me and Roberta, May 10th. From noon to 3 p.m., be sure to tune in. You can reach Roberta through her website.
Creative Health Solutions, with an S at the end, .org.
What's your phone number, Roberta?
973-951-2712.
973-951-2712.
Mm-hmm.
This is Armand DeMille with you. If you wanted a copy of today's program, you would call my office at 212-757-4488, 212-757-4488. Do Cruise, the new website. It's so much fun. ThePositiveMind.com. Newsletter's up on that, and we will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Thank you.
Peers by Eric Fattie.